As you can see, our text this morning comes from Hebrews 13, verses 1 through 3, and this text is all about love and how love is demonstrated. Now, I did note, it looks like the twins, doesn't it? And I thought, I should say something. It's not. I don't want you wondering the whole way through this sermon, I wonder if that's the twins. Yeah. Instead, we'll focus on what Hebrews 13, 1 through 3 has to say. Again, this text is all about love and how love is demonstrated. And in particular, it's how we love fellow Christians. That's really the focus. I mean, there's plenty of passages in the Bible that speak about loving people in general. Passages about love others as ourselves. There's passages about even loving our enemies. But our focus today is those who are part of the body, focusing on loving our brethren. And so now to recap what brought us to this topic, this idea, is that in chapter 12, we were exhorted to run the race, the faith race that's set before us, and run it with endurance. We're keeping our eyes fixed on Jesus, the founder and the finisher of our faith. We were told to keep an eye out on each other, or for each other as we run also, and to keep running this race by pursuing peace and holiness in our lives together. And now when we come to chapter 13, Hebrews is spelling out in some detail, a little further detail, what our endurance should look like. It's giving us some particulars on the pursuing peace and holiness. And the first three verses of chapter 13 relate to the whole seeking peace part of that. And that's because they deal with how we are to love one another. And verse 1 is very easy to remember from our text. It says, "Let brotherly love continue." Let brotherly love continue. Brotherly love is something that's commanded all over the place in the New Testament. We've got a couple passages here. John 15, 17. "These things I command you, to love one another." 1 Peter 1, 22. "Since you have purified your souls in obeying the truth through the Spirit, in sincere love of the brethren, love one another fervently with a pure heart." And 1 John 4. "If someone says, 'I love God,' and hates his brother, he is a liar. For he who does not love his brother, whom he has seen, how can he love God whom he has not seen? And this commandment we have from him, that he who loves God must love his brother also." Now here in our first passage, Hebrews 13, 1, it simply says, "Let brotherly love continue," to kick the idea off here, which indicates that they're already practicing brotherly love in some way. And in fact, we've read about them practicing love earlier in this letter, but they and we need reminded. We need reminded to keep at this loving each other thing, right? And that's because we all know from personal experience, love can and will grow cold. Biblical love is not something that just comes easy. It often takes work. It takes effort, right? And so the exhortation is to persist in practicing that brotherly love. And that's because brotherly love is demonstrated by those who run the race with endurance. And so if you want to be marked as someone who runs the race with endurance, brotherly love is going to be a characteristic of who you are. Brotherly love is a very big deal. It's a really big deal to God. Not only is it a big deal because it's commanded, not only is it a big deal because our lives will be enriched by loving each other the way that we're commanded to, right? But also loving our brethren, it's evidence of our very faith. In John 13, Jesus said in verses 34 and 35, he says, "A new commandment I give you, that you love one another, as I have loved you, that you also love one another. But by this love for one another, by this, all will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." And so Jesus says that love for each other is hugely important. How we interact with each other, how we think and how we speak about each other, what we tell the world about our brethren and our relationships with them, all of those things are indicators of our relationship with Jesus too. The word love is used to sum up all of our obligations to everyone, right? Paul here in Romans 13, "Owe no one anything except to love one another, for he who loves another has fulfilled the law. For the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not covet. And if there's any other commandment, are all summed up in this saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." Love does no harm to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfillment of the law. So Paul sums up all of our interactions that we have and says that love will always cause us to interact in the right way. And again, with that in mind, not all Christians are equally lovable, right? And biblical love just doesn't come naturally. The bottom line is we need to practice it. We need to practice it for the good of us all. We need to practice it to be right with God. We need to practice it in order to experience Christianity as it's supposed to be experienced. But also, we have to remember what these Hebrew people, our original readers, what they're enduring. Being persecuted can make it really hard for them to practice love. You see, when Jesus prophesied about the days leading up to the destruction of Jerusalem, that's their historical context. There's this thing on the calendar. They don't know exactly when, but there's signs to look for. There's this destruction coming and these huge upheavals and all kinds of horrible things happening in the world that we read about in Matthew chapter 24. So Jesus prophesied about those days leading up, and which is their historical context. And Jesus even mentioned that love would be an issue. He says in verses 9 through 13 of chapter 24, he says, "Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you'll be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will be offended, will betray one another, will hate one another. Then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. But he who endures to the end shall be saved." That the people who first received this letter were living through some very tough stuff. And so they needed all of the encouragement that they could get. The brethren needed all the love there was to be had. And so, and here's the thing though, our time is really not that all different in the fact that lawlessness abounds. Lawlessness absolutely abounds in our day too. The influence of the world right now is all about hating. I'm just hating anyone who does not line up exactly with whatever our beliefs are. You have to line up with me on everything, otherwise I hate you. The powers that be have done a masterful job of causing terrible divisions in our society. And so when our historical social context is a world full of hate, we have to realize that this is the setting in which we live. And we have to realize and be on the lookout that that can have an effect on us and how we view people and how we interact with people. And so therefore, too, we too need to be reminded that we must work on brotherly love. Let brotherly love continue. So the question is then, you know, what does this look like? What are the practical works of brotherly love in the context of the church? Well, it's easy to say, let it continue, but what do we do? Well, Hebrews doesn't give us a very long list. We've only got 3 verses, right? But it does give us some details, and really it speaks about being hospitable. It talks about taking care of others. Brotherly love practices hospitality even towards strangers who are brothers, and love ministers to those who are arrested for teaching the gospel. The rest of our text, verses 2 and 3, says, "Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing, some have unwittingly entertained angels. Remember the prisoners as if chained with them, those who are mistreated, since you yourselves are in the body also." That "you yourselves in the body also" tells us the context here, brotherly love, those who are our fellow Christians. And I want to address these two things that are talked about backwards. I want to do it backwards. I want to address the prisoners, and then we'll get to the hospitality. One has far more application to us than the other. Now, first of all, think about the prisoners. This text is not commanding us to start up a prison ministry. There's plenty of other texts that imply a prison ministry is a good work. This text is dealing specifically with brethren who've been in prison. Visit fellow Christians, care for them who've been in prison for the sake of the gospel is the idea. Identify with them as though you were in prison with them. And that's because we are all of the same body in Christ Jesus. They're suffering for Christ, and we have to remember them. Now that's not something you and I really that happens in our society yet, at least not for now, right? That the application may come to us in the future. But the original readers would absolutely be able to make some application. Christians were getting locked up all the time for teaching the gospel. Just look at the Apostle Paul for a quick reference. About the closest that we'll come to making an application from this command is when we're mindful of brethren elsewhere in the world who suffer for the gospel's sake. Either praying for them, supporting them financially, all of the above. We can help those who go into harm's way for Christ. Remember those people. They're part of the body too. Now, when it comes to hospitality, that's a different story. You know, and Hebrews specifically is showing hospitality to strangers here. And again, this is fellow Christians who are strangers in the body also. And the whole idea, the feel of it, the tone and the tenor is that a fellow Christian should never remain a stranger for long, right? They just shouldn't, right? And so the idea is that when we learn someone is a Christian, we should have the mindset that they're family. We're linked to them with what should be the most strongest bonds, right? Through Christ. Therefore, we should love them accordingly. And beginning clear back in the book of Genesis, we see the importance of showing hospitality to strangers. That is what's being referenced here. It's got to be. It's being referenced here to the entertaining angels part, right? Abraham welcomed three strangers as they passed his way in Genesis 18. Now, he didn't realize it, but he does eventually realize it. And then, of course, we know, being able to read about it, that two of those men were angels, and the third person seems to be the pre-incarnate visitation of the Lord Jesus. And we'll see the tie-in as we go along. And so Abraham made sure to feed them well, to take care of them. He got to feed the Lord, right? What an amazing honor that would have been. Now, the two angels, then, they continue on to Sodom. Lot greeted them, offered to take care of them, was quite adamant about taking care of them. He knew the danger of that wicked place. He didn't realize they were angels yet. It was unwittingly, right? So now, no doubt, Hebrews has those two occasions in mind when it says some have entertained angels without knowing it. But I beg you don't lose sight of what the text is actually teaching here. It's amazing some of the stuff you can read about this passage. Some folks forget the command because they're so intrigued with angels, right? People throughout the ages had. I mean, the Jews themselves in Jesus' day had all kinds of angelology stuff that's nowhere in Scripture. They just made it up because it was cool. Right? And so people today do the same thing. People are obsessed with anything that may seem mysterious. The emphasis here is not on angels, not to mention all of our TV shows. What was that one? Touched by an Angel? I think that was the big one. I looked it up yesterday. I forgot to include the number here. There's been over 50-some television TV series that include angels. We love the idea of angels, right? That kind of thing. And so the emphasis here is not particularly on the angels. It's on the reward that Abraham received by being hospitable to strangers. Right? Abraham took care of the Lord, right? So he refreshed the Lord of all people. And so this isn't saying that you need to be hospitable because, well, you never know if you're serving an angel. That hitchhiker might be an angel. Better pick him up. That's not what it's teaching, right? Rather, it's a blessing from God comes to those who are hospitable, right? And being hospitable, being like Abraham, shows you to be part of God's covenant family. And we'll show this more as we go along, right? The concept of showing hospitality, it continues on from there in biblical history. Later on, Abraham's servant was sent back to Abraham's homeland where he'd come from, right? In search of a bride for his son Isaac. And the woman that he was looking for was one who would show hospitality to a stranger. And Rebekah did just that. It's a very strong theme throughout Scripture. There's many stories throughout the Old Testament that show us that God's people who are like God, have always been expected to take care of other people. They have care for other people that sets them apart from those who are worldly. And then Jesus takes this concept and gives us a startling view from heaven's perspective on how we treat other Christians. Now, this very much ties in, what we're going to read next, very much ties into this, to verse 2 here, right? And so just like Abraham cared for Jesus, Jesus says, in a sense, we care for Jesus too. He says it here in Matthew chapter 25, starting in verse 31. When the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then he will sit on the throne of his glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he'll separate them one from another as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. And he'll set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then the king will say to those on his right hand, come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. See the tie into our text in Hebrews. And then verse 37, it says, then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you a drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you, or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? And the king will answer and say to them, assuredly I say to you, Inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. See the tie in to Hebrews? This is the whole idea. This is the whole idea behind our Hebrews texts, right? Jesus says that when we're hospitable to fellow Christians, even when they're strangers, right? That Jesus views that as us being hospitable to Jesus himself. And so again, loving the brethren is a very, very big deal. And we can tell that the first century church fully understood that. We have tons of examples of Christians taking care of Christians, taking care of Christians that they didn't know. And by doing so, they strengthened themselves, they strengthened others, they grew the church. Some examples, Acts 16 in verse 15, and when she, speaking of Lydia, and when she and her household were baptized, she begged us, saying, if you judge me to be faithful to the Lord, come to my house and stay. So she persuaded us. She took care of them. The Philippian jailer, right, in Acts 16, then they spoke the word of the Lord to him and to all who were in his house. And he took them the same hour of the night and washed their stripes. And immediately he and all his family were baptized. Now when he had brought them into his house, he set food before them. And he rejoiced, having believed in God with all his household. He took care of them. Next point is that the importance of hospitality to strangers can be seen from Paul's writings. Think about the widows in the church who need church support. There's a, have to be the type that practice hospitality. It says here in 1 Timothy 5, starting verse 9, do not let a widow under 60 years old be taken into the number, and not unless she has been the wife of one man, well reported for good works. If she's brought up children, if she's lodged strangers, if she's washed the saints' feet, if she's relieved the afflicted, if she's diligently followed every good work. It's commanded that elders or bishops specifically be hospitable in 1 Timothy 3 and again in Titus 1. Now, I believe that to be the case for a couple of reasons. First, an elder is a person who needs to set an example to all Christians. Our passage in Hebrews 13 is addressed to everyone, but church leaders specifically should be a good example in character and practice. But also, since elders are to protect the flock from false teachers, who better to entertain visiting preachers and teachers than the elders of the church? Who better to show hospitality to strangers than the men responsible for knowing whether that stranger is actually a wolf in sheep's clothing? Next, we have another example in John 3. There's some strong words concerning showing hospitality to strangers, or not. Starting in 3 John verse 5, it says, beloved, you do faithfully whatever you do for the brethren and for strangers who have borne witness of your love before the church. If you send them forward on their journey in a manner worthy of God, you will do well, because they went forth for his name's sake, taking nothing from the Gentiles. We therefore ought to receive such that they may be fellow workers for the truth. And so what John is doing here is he's commending them, right? He's commending the church for helping traveling Christians, right? Strangers who come through the area, and they need to be cared for. The people that John wrote to did exactly what Hebrews was talking about. But as John goes on in his letter, we read about a man who does the opposite in verses 9 through 11. I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to have the preeminence among them, does not receive us. Therefore, if I come, I will call to mind his deeds, which he does, prating against us with malicious words, and not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren, and forbids those who wish to, putting them out of the church. Beloved, do not imitate what is evil, but what is good. He who does good is of God, but he who does evil is not seen, has not seen God. So those like Diotrephes, who refuse to take care of their brethren, who could, even if those people are strangers, who hinder those who would also help strangers, as John says, are worthy of correction. The point is to not be hospitable, right? Not to take care of others, is to imitate what is evil. And yet, you know, offering hospitality to strangers is often neglected. I mean, as Hebrews 13:2 implies, right? And the question is, you know, why would that be? Well, we already noted some of this, but in the days when Hebrews was written, offering hospitality to strangers was risky business. To invite a Christian brother into your home identified you with that man, and where preaching Christ is a crime. Offering a traveling preacher hospitality makes you an accomplice. In those days, people didn't have the privacy that we experience today, and taking in a guest was quickly known by one's neighbors. Today, though, right? I think there's other hindrances to hospitality toward our brethren. One reason is that we often are strongly attached to our privacy. It's just the culture we're raised in. We can have private lives. We can have high fences in our security systems, right? And so there's a person on my Ring camera. I don't recognize them. I'm not going to answer, right? I'm not picking up the phone, right? Unknown caller, you know, that kind of stuff. I can keep the world at a distance. Bringing others into our home or even going somewhere with us, especially a stranger, that can be invasive. That can be inconvenient, at the least in our culture. I mean, we don't even do that kind of stuff with people we know that well, right? And second is we often avoid hospitality because we're so busy. We have very full schedules. We're busy or we're tired. We just look the other way, right? I mean, just think about it this way once. And this ties into last week's sermon. It's one reason I put the two back to back. How many folks in here who gather regularly do we really know well? Right? We noted that last week. One side doesn't know people on the other side, front and back, that kind of thing. And I don't know how many times I've been asked by some person, who is that person that sits over there and they're trying to describe the pew and this is what they look like. And I'm like, they've been here for 6 months or they've been here for a year. Yeah, what's their name again? You know, and I'm like, go ask them. You know, go ask them, right? Because we all need to do it. Like I said last week, we all need to work on it. And so the point is, if we don't even bother to really know all the people in this small congregation, then why would we be the type who are hospitable toward anyone else coming in, right? And why is that? Well, we can convince ourselves we're just too busy, or I think this might be the biggest one, we don't want to deal with the whole awkward getting to know you phase, right? That can be a tricky one. But you know, lastly, it could be something as simple as, you know, some people probably just fail to show hospitality to fellow Christians because they just don't realize how important it really is. Right? We can easily convince ourselves that we can do this Christianity thing with a fair amount of isolation. And it's my hope that after today, after going through the passages that we read today, that we'll all feel the need to do better with our church relationships, with truly loving others. We'll see how important it is to demonstrate that love for our brethren, and hopefully we'll put in the work to live up to Jesus' expectation of us. And we'll reap rewards for doing so. Not only does Jesus keep track of all that stuff, but it will enrich all of our relationships, and we'll be richly blessed in this life too for doing so. So let us think about that and applying that to our lives, that we do let brotherly love continue. Let us stand and sing.